You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey friends, welcome to the New Churches Podcast. It's the end of the year and we're looking back at the incredible podcast episodes we had over the course of the last year, and we're replaying some of the greatest hits. And one of those greatest hits, an episode that we got a ton of positive feedback about, was an episode about how to improve your preaching. That conversation was between Noah Oldham and myself, and Noah just had some gold nuggets of wisdom about how we could go about improving our preaching, make sure that we are better communicators of the gospel every time we open our mouths. And so we're going to replay this episode for you. It originally aired back in March of 2022, and we're going to play it for you right now. This is three ways to improve your preaching. Hey, Noah, today we're going to talk about ways to improve your preaching.
Man, what an important topic.
Yeah.
I think one of the most important topics we could talk about and continue to grow in as pastors, as planters, as leaders.
Mm-hmm. I think there's like two schools of thought in church planting when it comes to preaching. And I would say the minority view, maybe in my experience, the minority view, maybe like 40%, is preaching is really not all that important. What's most important is your ministry throughout the week, the way you relate to people, minister to people. And then there's another crowd who's very vocal.
Yeah.
And they say preaching's everything, you know? And so there's probably a spectrum and everybody all in between. Where do you fall on that?
I fall on the side that's more towards preaching is very, very important.
Yeah.
I believe that God wants the church to gather and to scatter. I believe there's a rhythm of breathing in and breathing out. I believe there's a moment for monologue and a moment for dialogue and a moment for activating what we've learned. But I believe as I read the scriptures over and over again, we hear the challenge in the local church to preach the word.
Yeah.
So I think preaching is vastly important.
There are a lot of factors that contribute to the success or failure of a new church, and none of them quite impact the church, in my view, like preaching. I think it's like Pinocchio's nose, like it's the most obvious feature of the church, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when people come to church, they think of preaching. And when they come into the room and they hear somebody explain God's word, if they do that well in a compelling way, in a way that's not boring, in a way that captures their, you know, mind's attention, it's a huge, you know, rise for the church. It's a great thing for the church. So I think we're both of the opinion that church planting, preaching is pretty important. So if that's true, then most church planters need to be consistently working on improving their preaching.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
It's a main function of pastors in the church. Since it's a main function, I think we should seek to do it better and better all the time.
Yeah. So, no, in my experience, church planters, most of them consider themselves to be pretty good preachers, yet, in my observation, most church planters need to grow in their preaching. Is that your observation, too?
Absolutely. I think most church planters, they desire to preach. One of the reasons they think about planting a church, they want to preach on a regular basis. Some of them think, I could preach better than the person that's preaching in my church every week. But most of them, as they get started, aren't. And they need time and reps and seasons to grow as a communicator so that they can be effective to help the church be strengthened in the long run.
Yeah. I think one of the most obvious ways that a person thinks to improve their preaching, and most preachers that I know, probably this is their first go-to move. They think, I want to get better. And they don't include anybody else in the process, but they themselves go judge their own sermons by listening to them or watching them.
Yeah.
And I remember a long time ago, I was introduced to this thought from John Stott. I'm going to read it to you. This is from the book Between Two Worlds. He says, if you look at yourself in a mirror, or you listen to yourself on tape, or you do both simultaneously on videotape, I fear you may find that you continue to look at yourself and listen to yourself when you're in the pulpit. In this case, you'll condemn yourself to the cramping bondage of preoccupation with self just in the time when, in the pulpit, it's essential to cultivate self-forgetfulness through a growing awareness of the God for whom and the people to whom you're speaking. I know actors make use of glass and tape, but preachers are not actors, nor is the pulpit a stage. So beware. It may be more valuable to ask a friend to be candid with you about your voice or your mannerisms, especially if they need correction. An Indian proverb says, "He who has a good friend needs no mirror." Then you can be yourself and forget yourself. Mm. So that's, I mean, John Stott.
It's John Stott. Who's going to argue with John Stott?
Who's going to argue with John Stott?
Well, about certain things.
But I think, you know, in some ways that pushes against kind of the conventional wisdom in improving preaching.
Yeah. So I was an athlete in college, in high school, watched a lot of game film. You don't know necessarily what you're doing wrong until you see yourself doing it. And I remember early days of preaching, as I had time, I did a lot less watching other guys because I found myself, as I watched or listened to other guys, I was picking up their vocal mannerisms, their just all of it. I was becoming them, and I didn't want to do that. So I spent some time listening to myself and to hear cadence and hear transitions and were things in my mind better than I thought they were and unhelpful for people, because not everybody's going to give you honest feedback right away. It takes time to build a culture of that. But then eventually when we began to videotape it, I saw more things in myself that I never thought possible, never imagined. I had these weird mannerisms. Mm-hmm. I'd rub both my hands on my bald head as I'm looking down at the text in the transition. And I had to be thinking, man, the crowd is probably just like, what is he doing right now? And the way I hold my hands and the way I make faces. And I would say it's been very, very helpful for me because I do want to disappear.
Yeah.
What I realize is I often carry more of myself into the pulpit than I realize. And if I want him to increase and me to decrease, I need to know what I'm bringing in to know what needs to decrease and might become distracting.
Yeah.
It's not really me. It's just some sort of tick that I've created.
Yeah. The common ticks are, you know, saying, clearing your throat. We've all sat under preachers who have some kind of distracting tick. So I think I'm with you. I think it's important to do that. Now, Stott's obviously right. The pulpit is a place of self-forgetfulness. We need to be thinking about God and his word. But I don't think that that necessarily means that we shouldn't try to correct our mannerisms. I have one pastor I work with who has a habit of pulling his sleeves up and then pushing them back down, like constantly throughout the sermon.
He pulls his sleeves up
and pushes them back down.
Yeah.
And so my kids make fun of him. It's just like, it just goes on throughout the whole sermon. If he wears long sleeves, he comes in long sleeves that day, you're thinking, that guy is going to be pulling his sleeves up and down all service.
Just recently, we had our youth group did an open mic night, and one of the youth leaders came to me and asked me my permission first. He said, "I've been watching you for the last year, and I believe that I can honor you at the same time roast you in front of our entire church for this event, which is a fundraiser for camp." And he did. He came up dressed like me, spoke like me. The entire presentation was alliterated. He nailed me because I have all of these things I come back to over and over again, and he was able to present it in a funny yet honoring way. He called it the Noah brand, and so we all have it. And now that I see it, I'm like, wow, I want to tone that down a little bit because it distracts people.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you mentioned this thing that I hadn't planned on talking about in this episode, but I think it's worth mentioning. You talked about picking up the mannerisms of those we admire.
Yeah.
Man, is that ever a thing?
Gosh, it's everywhere.
In the work we do, we're working with like hundreds of church planters all over the country, and you can basically tell when you listen to somebody preach, you can tell who they listen to.
I mean, I've been in St. Louis for all these years, a lot of young guys coming to Covenant.
Yeah.
And I would watch these prospective church planters in my preaching lab, like, well, you've done nothing but listen to Matt Chandler for the last 5 years.
Exactly.
The way you move your shoulders, the cadence of your voice, and he's a great preacher.
Yeah.
But I don't need you to be him.
You don't pull it off. Yeah.
I need you to be you. Yeah.
Well, it's like a photocopy of a photocopy every time we try to do that.
Somebody
who's a really uniquely gifted preacher, they're just not mimicable, really.
Yeah.
I mean, and so any attempt at it is, you know, it comes across like the guy making fun of you. It's like, it's almost there, but it's not quite.
Sure.
It just feels like a sad attempt.
Yeah.
I'm in Washington, D.C., have for years, you know, observed the crowd of people around Mark Dever, and inevitably they start talking like him. You know, they round their O's, they say amen instead of amen. You know, there's just like this whole set of things that they do. I myself worked with Platt for a while, and you know, he does the you know, thing, like when he gets to a really powerful point.
And
I find myself doing that in sermons too, like, look at there, you know, and I'm like, stop. But we can't help but be, you know, influenced by those who are really gifted
communicators. Mm-hmm. So I think, like you said, it's really helpful to limit the intake on that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And if we're, especially if we want to hone our own craft and find our own voice in preaching.
That's right.
Yeah. So let's talk about a couple of ways that young preachers can improve their preaching. We came up with three things here. And the first one is that you should, if you want to improve your preaching, the first place you need to go is you need to be able to clarify the characteristics of good preaching. What do you mean by good preaching? And no, I know at August Gate, you guys have created, you know, some points of clarification yeah. about what a good sermon is. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, we had to do this really out of necessity because we had a team teaching approach. We had multiple gatherings before we became autonomous churches. So we had different guys preaching. And so I was preaching everywhere somewhere. And then when I wasn't preaching there, someone else was. Yeah. And I had guys on my team that said, I feel insecure. I can't preach like you. I'm not you. I need to be me, but I need some sort of benchmark to know that I'm doing it well. Mm-hmm. I'm being the best version of myself. So we set out the standard. It's threefold. Number one, is it faithful? Mm-hmm. Number two, is it passionate? And number three, is it compelling? And the reason we came up with those benchmarks, it has to do with our mission and vision statement.
Yeah.
So we believe that we are called to be disciples, making more disciples of Jesus who grow to know, love, and follow Jesus together by his grace. So know, love, and follow. Is it faithful? Did you help people know the word, to know Jesus better? Next, is it passionate? Did you help people to love Jesus more?
Yeah.
And thirdly, is it compelling? Did you help them to follow Jesus?
Wow, that's
so good. Some people are going to come out, yes, I was compelling with my tone and my volume and those things. Others, I was compelling because I gave really helpful application questions. Yeah. All of our guys are different, and under that rubric, all of our guys are able to thrive.
Yeah, no, that's good. So, so for you, if you're just beginning to think about this, clarifying the characteristics of good preaching, maybe you just want to adopt Noah's 3 points there. Is it faithful? Is it passionate? Is it compelling? As a way for you to begin to think about the sermons that you're preaching. The second point is sort of connected to that. The second thing I think preachers can do other than just listening to their sermons by themselves to improve their preaching is to create a culture in their new church where sermon feedback is welcomed and weekly.
Yeah.
Do you guys do this now? Have you done it in the past? How's that work?
Yeah, so we used to, when we first started, we would sit down and do our post-worship meeting the next day or next couple of days, and we would talk through the sermon and the worship set. And what we realized is we didn't have the benchmark set. And so it just became a time for people's opinions to rule. Mm-hmm. Well, I like this better than that. When we set the benchmarks first, then we're judging it based on the benchmarks, not preference.
Yeah.
So it's no longer personal. I want to do those three things. Those are the principles I've set forth. So if it could be better, more passionate, tell me.
Yeah.
If it can be more compelling, help me do that. And so we do that now, but we call it wins and opportunities. Mm. There's no losses. It's just an opportunity for growth. We not only do the preaching, we do the entire Sunday, the entire week, discipleship as well. We bring everything underneath those questions. What are wins? What are opportunities? So much so that we see it from our preachers. Guys will come after they've preached and say, Noah, give me some feedback.
Yeah.
What did you take away from this?
Right.
But also in between services, what I try to do is model this. I am totally insecure. I often tell people in any room of leaders, I'm probably the most insecure leader there. I don't always show it, but I am. Mm-hmm. So I don't want feedback, but I know I need it.
Yeah.
So even in between services, I'm going to preach the same sermon. I go to my team, I go to a couple of different leaders and say, hey, was it helpful? What can I shift? Was this too much?
Yeah.
Do I need to do more here? And depending on the context, I'll ask different people. Maybe it's the elders. Maybe it's some youth leaders because we're talking to students. Maybe I'm speaking specifically to women and I need my wife or some other women to speak into it. So I think creating that culture of honest feedback at a church level of membership, but also in your team is super important.
Yeah. Yeah. It is so important. And I think, you know, for me, we've always done a sermon review, you know, a post-service meeting as well. And even if it's just kind of fast and there's nothing interesting that comes out of it, just the fact that you do it over and over again communicates to your team and your volunteers that you're a person who wants to improve in your preaching and you're approachable. Yeah. And I think so many pastors that I've worked with in the past and I see in their teams, their teams feel like they can't say what they really want to say to them about improving things. I'm reminded of this even on my team. It's just like when you're leading a work, it's really hard to look at the person who's leading it and throw criticism at them.
Yeah.
And so, unless it's really welcomed and invited. So, so it's on you as the leader to create an environment where people know for sure that they can approach you and they're not going to, they're not going to be sorry that they did in some way. So we want to create a culture where sermon feedback is welcomed and frequent. And then lastly, I think you just, you want to preach a lot.
Yeah.
Reps, right? Yes. We want to preach a lot and we want to preach in various settings. Mm-hmm. So how important are reps for a preacher?
I think it's everything. For years and years, when I first started preaching, it was really any opportunity I could get.
Yeah.
And it was youth camp. I'm preaching to 9 and 10 year olds at a summer camp.
Yep.
I get called up to the big show and get to preach in big church finally, you know, when I'm 22 years old, you know. But I think more than just preaching, it's also learning to handle a mic and speak in front of a crowd. I remember one of the most formational times in my life was a summer I was doing an internship at my home church, and they let me do the announcements at our Wednesday night fellowship potlucks.
Yeah.
And it's real big. It's kind of downtown in our community, and there's all these people and they're barbecuing. And I got up there, I have to grab everybody's attention from doing other things.
Yep.
And give us instruction at the same time, kind of have this compelling thing of we're here together. And I remember after giving announcements, some of them came up to me and said, "You are going to be an anointed preacher." And it filled me with so much courage.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And I just gave announcements. So I think anytime you can handle a mic or you can be in front of a crowd, if you want to grow as a communicator, don't be like, "That's not for me. I'm better than that." No, do it, because it's God giving you an opportunity to learn to find your voice in a different direction.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm completely with you about that. I feel like people having lots and lots of opportunities is going to be great. And sometimes I've noticed that in the church planners that I work with, some of them welcome any opportunity that comes their way, and some of them are kind of selective and picky and choosy. I remember interacting with, you know, one person who had an opportunity to go and speak at a church to a sort of 70 to heaven Sunday school class, you know, an older group of people that had 30 or 40 folks in it. And he was like, "I don't really know if it's worth it for me to do that." And I'm like, "Man, go. Any chance you get in front of people. Like, when are you going to get to preach in front of folks who are 70 plus years old again in your life? You know, like, this is a thing you need to do." And so I really think reps are important. I heard Tim Keller say at some point along my journey, I heard him say, "Your first 300 sermons are garbage."
Mm.
And that just really lodged in my head. That just for you, if you're not to 300 yet, you know, you should assume your preaching needs a lot of improvement. First 300 sermons are garbage.
Yeah. I think one of the things I would encourage pastors and planters want to improve their preaching to do is step back and take another role in communication in your church. There's weeks where I'm not preaching and they want to find someone else to do the next steps or the announcements. And I'll say, "Can I do that?"
Yeah.
Because even though it's not the sermon, they're like, "Well, it's kind of a step down in our communication ladder."
Right.
You're already at the top of the food chain. It keeps me fresh and casting vision in a new way.
Yeah.
I have to cast vision in 5 minutes of why you should be a part of these next steps that we have as a church. It keeps me sharp.
Yeah.
And so I think that never think yourself more highly than you ought to and find ways to communicate. That's going to help you really get out of that rut of just, "This is what I normally do every week," and shake you into, "How do I improve?" By doing something different.
Yeah.
Is how you improve.
Yeah. There's also this thing that happens when you sort of cross train, so to speak, and you do different things in the life of the church. There are times in our church where, because I'm a musician too, I'll lead worship sometimes. There's times where I'll do announcements. There's times where I'm preaching, and we have several, you know, lots of people who are doing that. In fact, we rotate through our membership doing the welcome every week. And it's funny, it becomes kind of like a little, it's like friendly competition to see who can do it the best and the most creatively, you know, and it's not, sometimes people go a little far with it, but for the most part, it's people put a lot of thought into it and they get up there and, you know, it's sort of the best way to make things not become rote and just done over and over again, to take people who take the gospel seriously, take standing in front of God's people seriously and say, "Hey, spend some time on this." Even things like public prayers, you know, spend some time writing out your thoughts on that prayer.
So
don't just stand up there and shoot from the hip on your prayer. That's what most people in most churches do. They just stand up there and shoot from the hip on the prayer. But a thoughtful, well-written prayer is powerful sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes, we've had, you know, all kinds of experiences where I've just thought, "Man, I'm so glad that that person took the time to do that. And they have such a unique perspective on that." So that's a really helpful conversation. Well, before we wrap up today, I want to mention that we have a course on newchurches.com called Bivocational Ministry. It's a totally free course, like all the courses on newchurches.com. And if you have any interest in learning about bivocational or even co-vocational church planting, you should probably take the course. Hugh Halter, Joel Seymour, Scott McConnell, Ed Stetzer are all part of the course, and it's going to be really helpful for you. So if you're a bivocational minister, a co-vocational minister, you know someone who is, encourage them to go over to newchurches.com and take the bivocational ministry course.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.